just recently, just since we took our break.
Oh, okay. I didn't.
Can you talk about Emma Culloden?
Yeah, or do you want me to talk about these other ones that I...
Yeah, could you do that too? I'm so sorry.
No problem. And we're going to have to stop before too long. You know, we've been talking for over 3 hours. Can you believe that?
Well, you know, I've been doing this with my grandmother for the past couple months. And, I mean, we would work like from 9 in the morning until like 8 in the evening for over a weekend, for a 2-day period.
Well, yeah, and she's really up on a lot of, she's done a lot on genealogy, hasn't she?
She has. But, so anyway, you talk about the photos and everything that you were just mentioning.
I talked about Fleming Wright.
Who
was Emma Crooks Cox's uncle. He was a Confederate soldier in General Morgan's command. He was captured by the Yankees and put in line to be shot in Cincinnati. He gave the Masonic distress signal, and the man in charge took him out of the lineup and sent him to a prison on an island. I wondered if it could have been Andersonville. And to survive, he ate rats roasted. I guess they were protein. And Dr. Edward O. Garrant, G-U-E-R-R-A-N-T. He was a doctor and also a Presbyterian minister, missionary in the mountains from Kentucky to Florida. He was an aide to General Lee in the Civil War, and he hid Confederate papers in a barn during the war. They were recovered and are now in a Confederate museum in Richmond, Virginia. And he always kissed relatives after a church service. And once he kissed a dowager from England by mistake, and it was quite an embarrassment at that time. Okay, now Aunt Emma. She was just always a part of our family when I was a baby. And she was just talked about. I have pictures of her from when she looks like she was probably 12. And then later on, these were taken by a photographer in Mount Sterling named C.H. Bryan. Evidently, he was doing that.
What did she look like in her young years? What did she look like?
She wore little wire glasses. She was pretty. She didn't wear them when she was young. Uncle Fred had a mustache that hung down. And he wore a suit and a hat and a cane, had a cane, and the suit had a vest, and he wore a bow tie. And
did Emma, with her husband being from Scotland, did she ever have an opportunity to go to Europe?
I don't think so. I don't think people did that much.
I
have a cute picture of him. He's sitting in a wicker chair reading a newspaper, and she's standing up in back of him looking at the camera. These are all pictures taken in a studio. All these I've talked about are all studio pictures, and I have tons of snapshots also, which you probably... Oh, I know what I was going to tell you. I had when we were talking about black people. I have a darling picture of a black woman with a little girl. Mother thought it might be her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, that would be so wonderful.
It's just a darling picture. And there's a dog with a curly tail in front of him that hardly shows because the black woman is sitting on a chair and the little girl is kind of leaning on her. And Mother couldn't remember who the black woman was and the little girl. She wasn't even, I don't think she was even positive it was her.
Wow. Well, I'm excited about seeing it.
It's a darling picture. And I'll get, I don't know how much of this Peggy can get onto discs, but she's going to work on it.
So tell us about Emma Culloden and what was her character like? What kind of qualities did she have?
I think she was quite well known in Bozeman. I think she had a lot of friends that were of the upper crust, so to speak. I know some of them, that there were the stories and different people, and I know that they built a little, well, kind of a chapel in the mountains. I'm kind of foggy on this, but she had friends that were very, I think, upper crust friends, and I think she did quite a bit socially, probably. I don't know for sure, but I, because of Mother mentioning of the friends that they had there, she was, well, they had a lot of friends, and I know that when Mother was injured, I know that she went and volunteered to work in a lawyer's office free because she wanted to learn being a stenographer. And he had told her he couldn't afford to hire somebody. And she said, well, I just want to do it for the experience. And then after she worked for 1 month, he insisted on paying or something because she had learned so much.
Right, right.
And I think it was through him that she got a job in Helena. But I think that they were, I think that the women of that time led a social life, really. And in Mother's letter, she was always doing something in Glendive, even always doing stuff with friends.
Uh-huh.
And I think that kind of, maybe that's how it was in Kentucky, too.
So, Emma Culloden, after her husband died, she came and lived with your parents.
No, she came and lived with Mother, who wasn't married yet.
Oh, I see.
And she lived in that little cabin. Well, when you see it, you'll know. on her homestead.
So your mother lived by herself on a homestead?
Yeah.
She had her own little place.
She did, and she had some experiences. One experience, she had a dog, and she had a dog named Dammy and a horse named Tramp.
Uh-huh.
And Aunt Emma was getting deaf at that time when she lived there. And one time, they didn't have, of course, any electricity or anything, so they didn't have any cooling, so they dug a hole in the ground and covered it up, and that was where they kept things cool. And Aunt Emma went out to get some butter or something out of that hole in the ground, and she didn't hear, but there was a rattlesnake there, and it was rattling, and Dammy, the dog, saw what was going on, and he rushed and grabbed the snake by the neck and shook it and shook it and shook it till it died. And it didn't bite Aunt Emma because the dog saved her life, really. And the dog was so angry at the snake for so long that they finally had to take it away from him and put it up on the roof because he wouldn't leave it alone.
So your mother had her own place.
Oh, yeah.
And
Uncle Jim wasn't always there when she was. She lived alone.
Who built her cabin?
I don't know.
I mean,
Uncle Jim helped.
So she had some, did she probably just hire some guys to build her a cabin? Or do you think it was already there?
No, it wasn't there. It was just prairie when she went there and piled on it. I know that she had, I suppose she had somebody put wheat in because she was having trouble with one of them. Some of these ranchers resented homesteaders. They called them honey oakers or something like that because they would be taking some of the range that these cattle ranchers just had free range everywhere without owning it, and they resented a little bit the homesteaders. And one of their herds of cattle kept getting into Mother's wheat, and so she took her gun and shot to scare them off. She didn't shoot any of the cattle. She just shot to scare them off, and so some of the cowboys came to see her, and they were telling her that she hadn't any business shooting around their cattle because it was making them run, and they were losing weight and stuff. And she said, well, she would go talk to the owner, and she went and talked to the owner and got him to fence her wheat to keep the cattle out of it. And that was really quite something because they did not like homesteaders, and this man that owned the cattle did that for her. He said later he didn't understand how anybody could possibly have talked him into doing such a thing, but Mother did.
So, was she afraid living out on, she living out there on her own in this cabin?
Yeah.
She was afraid?
There were times when she was afraid. One time she rode her horse in to get the mail in Sumatra, and riding back, she heard this horse behind her, and there was a man, and if she'd ride fast, he'd ride fast. If she'd ride slow, he'd ride slow, and he followed her. She got to her cabin, and she got off the horse and just didn't even take his saddle or anything off, and just went quickly in and locked it and got her gun, because he was watching her cabin from a distance. And she put something up against the door so nobody could get in, and she sat there with her rifle and watched, and finally, by morning, he was gone. But that was scary.
Wow. Any other stories like that that she ever shared with you?
Oh, there's a lot of them. If I can, I can go
just
on.
Just being out on her own out there. I'm looking at a picture of this log cabin, and you know what? Who was her closest neighbor? I mean, how far away was?
Well, Uncle Jim was probably her closest, and he was probably a couple miles away, but he wasn't always there when she was there.
So a couple miles away.
And I don't think there was anybody within sight anywhere. And she was riding tramp one time, and he stopped and would not move. And she kicked him, and he wouldn't move, and she kicked him, and he wouldn't move. And she looked down, and there was a rattlesnake crawling out from under his two front feet, and then there was some rattlesnake. They were kind of almost like they were immigrating someplace, and the horse did not move during all this time, and they sat. She doesn't know how long it was because you were scared and you were sitting there. It probably felt longer than it was, but then when all of the snakes moved away, then the horse went on.
Wow. What did she say about the cowboys?
Not a whole lot. She got along with them. She got along with everybody. We had, there was one cowboy that worked around in that area. His name was Pug McMillan. And
what was his name?
Pug McMillan.
Can you spell his first name?
Pug.
Pug, okay.
And he came to see us in Glendive one time. Now, understand that Glendive is a town of less than 5,000. And he came to, and he had on this really wild cowboy shirt, and he was going to stay and visit with Mother and Dad for a little while. And he went to the movie one night and came back. It was the first night he was there, and he came back and he said, "I'm sorry, I just can't stand the big city anymore. I've got to go back to the to the ranch."
That's funny. That's funny. So how did she secure her land? Was it given to her as a homesteader?
To get the land, you had to prove up on it, and that means that you had to live on it for 9 months of the year. And you had to stay there for I forget how long, but you were able to get, I think it was 160 acres. I'm not sure on that, what you had to prove up on it. You had to prove that you were there, and you had to build, you know, have a dwelling on it and stay there. But you didn't have, you only had to stay 9 months of the year, and then you got the deed to it. But you had to live there, and you had to do that.
So your mother lived there by herself for 9 years to secure the land, 9 months to secure her land.
Well, yeah, I think she was there for more than that. But she, when it was winter, she didn't stay there. She, and there is in her book an accounting of leaving and going from Jordan to Mile City in this wagon, and it's quite colorful. You might pop that up and read about it, because it was quite something. And she wrote that. She was a reporter for the United Press and also for the Great Falls Tribune from our town for years. And she wrote it up, and it was featured in one of the Christmas magazine sections of the Great Falls Tribune.
I see.
And it's in the book. It's almost a chapter of the book, I think.
So what was she when she when she settled out in Montana, her aunt was in Bozeman. And then, how long, do you know how long after, you know, she got out to Montana, her uncle died and her aunt moved in with her?
No, I don't. I know that she lived there, and then I think she went and got the land near Jordan because Uncle Jim had done it. And so she proved up on some, and owned it. And then I think afterwards, Uncle Jim farmed it. And that was really a little cabin.
A little what?
Where she lived was not very big.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's tiny.
Yeah, and she and Aunt Emma lived there in the summer. It kind of boggles your mind.
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, Aunt Emma, you know, being this Southern woman, you know, coming, you know, from a much, you know...
Well, mother, too.
And then coming in and living in this tiny little cabin.
Well, they handled it quite well.
Well, they obviously wanted this kind of lifestyle because they stayed.
Well, they stayed, but then they... I think that's when Mother married Dad.
So, and how much long... I mean, how many years went by, you know, did she actually live out kind of as a single woman out in Montana before getting married?
You know, I don't know. I know that Dad called her a suffragette because she went around on a horse and she did all these things.
Suffragette. Well, you know, reading her letters, I mean, she just seems, you know, she's working for the Red Cross. She's applying for this one job because of the pay. You know, she's getting ready to go to Europe, potentially. She's disappointed that she can't. It just sounds like she has all these irons in the fire and that she's got a lot going on in her life.
Yeah, and then when she worked for the Red Cross after World War One, and she filed claims of over, I think it was 2,000 soldiers from World War One, and I don't know how many from World War Two and Korea, and even some from Vietnam. And she had a very fond place in her heart to veterans, and helped a lot of them. And, well, I told you about George Lenz. There were other ones, Pat Coyne, and, you know, a lot of them that kind of...
What did she do for the veterans?
She filed claims for them.
Okay.
If there was an emergency in their family, she got them home from the service to deal with it. She, whatever they needed, she did. And, there were always people waiting in our living room for help. Oh, I don't think hardly a day went by when somebody wasn't there. And she sat in the room and rattled out their claims on the typewriter and got them. And they told her a lot about their experiences in the war. And I listened some. There was one veteran that I was not allowed to be anywhere near when he was there, and Mother got him into the hospital for the insane in Sheridan, Wyoming, and she went. And there was another one that she got in there whose name was Philip Stoltz. She always sent Philip packages at Christmas. The other man, she didn't. She went there to see Philip Stoltz, took him on a picnic, but the other man, the man in charge of the hospital, told her that he wouldn't spend the night with him anywhere for $1 million.
Hmm.
Because he is a pretty sick man. And she got him in there, and she sent men to the hospital when they needed help. She wasn't always popular. There was one doctor at the Northern Pacific Hospital, and one of her veterans was there, and he needed more extensive care, and Mother went up there and filled out his form to get him into the Veterans Hospital in at Fort Harrison in Helena, Montana, and Dr. Everett got her in the hall and started raving at her for taking his patients away. And she got really mad because she told him, and she started raving at him and told him that, sure, he would be willing to keep the patients till they had no money, and then he'd be perfectly happy for her to get him into another hospital. And she just really got mad at him, and he ended up begging her to please be quiet. But she really stood up for her veterans. And she had the same experience with a lawyer. I don't know if you know it, but Mother took a correspondence course in law. She never did the final exam so she could be a lawyer, but she wanted to know, to have the knowledge to help her veterans.
Right.
And so she filed all these claims, and she helped them, and this lawyer threatened to sue her for practicing law without a license.
Right.
And she got mad at him because she said, well, you go ahead and sue me. I never have charged anybody for anything. How do you think that would look? And so that was the end of that.
Interesting.
But she could, she was always doing something. There was a polio epidemic, and there were a bunch of crippled children, and she had the doctor from the crippled children's hospital come and examine all those children that had polio and were crippled and deal with them how they needed to be dealt with. And maybe that was another reason the doctor didn't like her. But she did that. She, one of our minister's sons was cross-eyed, and she got a doctor in Missoula to take care of the surgery for him for free, and got the Northern Pacific Railroad to allow him to have a pass to ride to get his treatments and stuff. And he really, Mother said it was just something. He would stand in front of the mirror and look at himself and be so happy. And he'd tell patients in the doctor's office in Missoula what a wonderful doctor he was. And I mean, things like that she was doing all the time. There was a woman who was a veteran, and Paula Iden, and she had a child, and she also had a baby. And I know that she was abusing the baby sometimes, and whenever she would kind of start to go off, this little girl would call Mother and tell her to come quick.
Oh, really?
And all kinds of things like that went on all the time, and it was just part of life. You didn't pay much attention to it. But I think all these Kaw women were very strong women. And I think I'm going to have to quit talking and get myself some lunch and get ready to go see the doctor in a little bit.
Well, why don't we do this? We could dedicate some time this weekend to continuing.
Okay.
And, you know, I need to kind of, let me...